Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know. Today is Tuesday, and of course that means here on the Inside Scoop it's Election Tuesday. Every Tuesday from now until that most important Tuesday on November 2nd, when the voters vote to kick out the Republicans. Here on the Inside Scoop, we're going to discuss election news, all that's going on in the election races between Bush and Kerry and the other elections on that very important day in November. And, of course, we have that famous music by Donnie Daly in Los Angeles, Kick Out the Republicans, which started here on the Inside Scoop and is spreading now from liberal talk show host to liberal talk show host. There aren't many of us, but the song is spreading. And on this Election Tuesday, there are many, many things I want to discuss. In all the bad news that's going on in Iraq and the economy, there is a silver lining. And the silver lining is that Americans are finally starting to get it. The polls are showing that Kerry is pulling ahead of Bush. That doesn't mean that we can be complacent by any stretch. It is only May. There's a long way to go until that fateful Tuesday in November. But people are starting to learn what Bush is about. And all those old sayings by Bush that he ran, where he really tried to run as a moderate. Remember when he said, I want to be a uniter, not a divider. I want to change the tone in Washington. When he talked about compassionate conservatism, which of course is an oxymoron. It's illogical. Compassionate conservatism just don't go together. Americans are finally starting to get it, and Kerry's starting to pull ahead, even though it's true that the race is very close, and a lot of them don't know who John Kerry is yet. So I want to talk about that today, and also want to talk about John Kerry's choices for vice presidential nominee. Who do you think will help Kerry the most in getting out the vote and getting more votes in being a good president? Who should John Kerry pick as vice presidential nominee? And every time you call in, I'm going to ask you to make a choice. We'll take a tally here. We'll see who you like. There are many, many choices. You can look, of course, at the people that ran against John Kerry in the primary. Look at John Edwards, Senator of North Carolina. Dick Gephardt, the majority leader of the Democrats, the leader of the Democrats, but minority because Democrats are a minority in the House. But the leader of the Democrats in the House of Missouri, maybe he can bring his state. How about General Wesley Clark? What do you think of Howard Dean? Would he be a good vice presidential choice? Or Phil Graham of Florida, Senator of Florida in that very important state? And then there's a whole list of governors. Governor Richardson of New Mexico, Governor Rendell of Pennsylvania, Governor Napolitano, really the only serious female choice they're talking about, in addition to Senator Hillary Clinton. What do you think about her? Governor Napolitano, of course, is of Arizona, very important in the Southwest. And speaking of Arizona, some have talked about Senator John McCain. How'd you like to see him on the vice presidential ticket? You think there's a chance of that? Some even have talked about Bill Clinton, President Bill Clinton. I think many of us missed the days of Bill Clinton. In fact, a recent poll of Americans shows how nostalgic they are. A recent poll showed that Clinton was the third favorite president of the United States after Lincoln and John Kennedy. Huh, he beat out George Washington. I bet the Republicans didn't think that would happen when they impeached him. Can Bill Clinton run again? Actually, he can't. And in this hour, I'm going to explain to you constitutionally why Bill Clinton cannot run again. There are other choices, some are more obscure. There's Governor Tom Vilsack of Iowa. Some have talked about Senator Evan Bay of Indiana or Senator John Burrow of Louisiana. Do you have a choice? Is there a choice that I haven't mentioned that you would like to see as Kerry's vice presidential pick? What do you think? And if you want to call in and give your choices, please do. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Toll-free number 877-577-2667. Or you can send me an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. I also want to talk in this hour a little bit more, and maybe even a lot more, about the debate I had yesterday with Glenn Stanton, who works for Focus on the Family, the main organization opposing gay marriage. It was quite a debate. The hour flew by. We skipped the commercial breaks, and it still flew by very quickly. And I know that not all of you got a chance to speak out. My phone banks were completely full. I got about 24 emails, and my blog on my website. And I want to urge everyone to visit my website, radioinsidescoop.com. Check out the blog there, the comments that you make, the weblog you can make on every show, including this show and yesterday's show. The comments there were a lot. There were 6, 7, 8. I have lost count, maybe 10 by now. And if you didn't get a chance to hear yesterday's show, I want to encourage you to go back, go to the broadcast archive on my website, and listen to the show. It was quite a debate. Quite a raucous debate, I might add. I think it was respectful, but clearly Glenn Stanton and I profoundly disagreed. And I want to talk a little bit about that debate this hour, and if you want to call in and didn't get a chance to do that, here's your chance to do that as well, 877-57-SCOOP. You know, when I see the lines of people in Massachusetts that are lining up to get married and read the headlines in the newspaper today, I got to say, it was somewhat emotional for me to hear these couples, one after the other. This one's been together 27 years. This one's been together 12 years. These people have tried. It struck me that May 17th, 2004, is exactly 50 years after May 17th, 1954, the day the Supreme Court issued the case Brown versus Board of Education that did its best, let's say, to slow down, to end segregation in America, to stop legal segregation in American public schools. Many may argue that de facto segregation, that there still is segregation between whites and blacks, and in fact, I'm going to discuss that issue later on in the week. But it's interesting to me that 50 years after, we have the first step towards equality for gay people as well. I think we need to rename May 17th Civil Rights Day. And two very important events happened on that day, and not to forget the connections between them. And the connections really, they struck me, because as I was reading the paper today, reading about the couples, how some of them, you know, stood out in the rain overnight, were waiting, they were all afraid that the right would be taken away at the last minute. They were all a little nervous, and that's why they rushed to get married already, because they knew that everyone was doing, on the right, was doing everything they could to stop it. Governor Romney of Massachusetts, that right-wing radicals had even appealed to the United States Supreme Court, although there's absolutely no legal basis for the U.S. Supreme Court to hear the issue. It relies entirely on state law. But hey, you know, after the 2000 election, the Supreme Court, they might just break the law again, or at least the right-wingers hoped. And of course, in 2 years, the Massachusetts voters will get a chance to overturn their court, to pass a constitutional amendment to undo those marriages, to make them, to retroactively, if you will, divorce these people who are so happy today. And what struck me, I guess, as I was watching the news, is remembering in the early days, and I'm a bit young for this, my parents have told me more, but the early days after the Civil Rights era, there were a number of blacks who thought and feared that their rights, so sorely won, might be undone. And there were blacks that got very used to treating whites with a different respect than blacks, particularly in the South, to not even doing things like sharing a dinner table, whites and blacks. We're going to talk more about this later in the week. But what struck me is that the same kinds of fears were those of the gay couples. And you know what? I don't think, at the end of the day, I trust the voters of Massachusetts. I trust people's fairness. You know, there are people who oppose gay marriage, and I would venture the great majority of them do so out of ignorance, out of fear, wondering, as Glenn Stanton said yesterday, about a vast untested social experiment. Of course, this isn't a vast untested social experiment. It's people in love trying to get married. That's not untested. That's been tested for years. And people who can't get over the difference, well, you know, I think that after 2 years of Massachusetts having gay marriages, and they see that, you know, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts doesn't fall into the sea, no great tsunami goes and takes over the state, that most people in Massachusetts will get it. They won't want to take their neighbors and forcibly divorce them. I mean, think about what a hateful thing that is, to say to a couple, I'm sorry, your marriage, your love isn't good enough for me. I'm perfect, you're not, and I'm great, you're horrible, and sorry, I'm going to forcibly divorce you. That's a very, very arrogant thing to say. And it strikes me, again, also the differences between the churches. You know, when people came out to the protest, there were very few protesters. Again, there were 10,000 or more in Provincetown alone cheering on the gay couples in Massachusetts, and there were about 15 protesters. And I think the answer is that the churches and synagogues that came out that support a God of love, they really wanted to reach out to other people. They were there. They were there. But, you know, it's very hard to rile people up for a God of hate. It's very hard. You may be uncomfortable about gay marriages, but it's very hard to rile people up to forcibly divorce people that are already married. Maybe you'll want to try to stop it. But do you really think people are going to support retroactive divorces? I don't think so. And one of the things that struck me in my blog If you go and you look at the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com and you see the comments, you'll see a lot of really good points made by a number of my listeners, most of which agree with me, but not all. There's some that disagree with me. But I found most striking, I think, that there were only three comments so far that disagreed with me on my blog. And two of them were simply hate-filled. They were just hate-filled. They were calling names. They were using epithets. And I considered removing them from the blog. In fact, I had a couple people write in suggesting I do so. But I'm not going to. I think it's important for people to see that most people who are against gay marriage are doing it out of hate. I mean, not that okay, well, let me take that back. No, most people who are against gay marriage are fearful or ignorant or not really thinking it through. They don't care that much about it. They're politicians that are afraid of the majority. Those people, I understand, they're not filled with hate. But the people who really oppose it, the people that it rankles them down in their soul, the people hits them down in their gut and makes them really uncomfortable, they hate someone. They hate gay people. Maybe they hate themselves. I don't know. But we got a lot to talk about in this hour, and I want to talk in addition about some of the law that surrounds gay marriage, because really it's a bigger topic than we could do yesterday, and really we can talk about it all this week. Some of the law that surrounds it, what's going on legally. But at the same time, it is Election Tuesday. I do want your vice presidential picks for John Kerry. I do want to know whether you think, finally, John Kerry is going to win in November 2nd. Is this the turning point? Do you think we've got a long way to go? Again, the numbers are 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can call email me, at comment@RadioInsideScoop.com. Let me go to the phones. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
My name is Grant. I'm from Auburn, Alabama.
Hi, Grant from Alabama. What do you think about any of the topics I was raising?
Well, first I wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed your show yesterday. That was actually my first time listening to your show, and wow, that was great.
Yeah, it was quite a debate, wasn't it? I tell you, it was hard sometimes. We were interrupting each other so much, I think, for either of us to get a word in edgewise. But it was a very interesting debate. One of the things I found most interesting was how many times he tried to throw around social science statistics. But luckily, I had read the exact same reports that he was talking about and could show that there weren't any. I mean, I asked him dead on. I said, is there a single report that shows that gay parents are worse than straight parents? And he couldn't cite a single one. But I don't know. What did you think?
I thought you were really knowledgeable on your information, and that really helped us out. That was a good thing. He pulled some stuff out, and I was like, "Well, that's interesting. How does that stand up?" And you came right back, and I was like, "Wow, good. Great. Because not everybody knows all that stuff, and it just goes to show you just what the other side's, what we're up against, really."
I got to tell you, he's their best guy. All right, this is the guy who trains debaters to oppose same-sex marriage. He actually, on the website, Focus on the Family website, he's got talking points, talking points for opposing same-sex marriage. And he even has in his website, it's actually, I was amazed that he'd be this obvious. He has points here where he says, I want my child to have a mother and a father. And he says, here, please show great emotion. This line always wins applause. I mean, he's actually directing people not just what to say, but how to say it. But I think the answer is when he comes up against facts, hard facts, they got nothing. They got emotion. They got religion. They just don't have facts.
Right. Maybe you should get a website going on to counter some of these arguments that he likes to put on his website.
Well, there are some, and let me actually give some out if you want some of them. One is the Human Rights Campaign at HRC.org. There's also an organization that I knew well when I lived in California. It's called Marriage Equality California. They got a lot of good stuff there. But I got to tell you, the main way that I went and researched the issues was neither of those. Actually, I didn't find either of those websites as useful as his own. I went to Focus on the Family's website, and I went through all their papers, and I checked the footnotes. I actually read the footnotes that they were citing to, and they would cite to something. For example, they cited that the gay families are like step-parent families. In other words, step-parent families have been shown not to be as there have been more abuse in step-parent families than non-step-parent families. Now, again, there may be the difference of 8% versus 1%, and 90% are okay, but there's more abuse. That's been shown. And so I went and I checked the data on what they said, and in fact, what the person was saying was that in gay families that have been split up where you have a straight person marrying a gay person, they have a divorce, and then a new person comes in, that gay step-parents are about the same as straight step-parents.
Right.
It said absolutely nothing about gay parents raising a child from birth. That's why I kept hitting that issue home with Glenn, and he kept, trying to avoid my question.
Yeah, I don't think he even saw that coming.
No, I don't think he did, because I don't think many people take the time to read the footnotes. You know, and it just shows. I once did a paper in college on Joe McCarthy and the press, Senator McCarthy, who claimed all these people were communists in government. And he once wrote a book that had 540-something footnotes. And the press was like, wow, that's a really, really incredible book. Well, I remember as part of my paper, I checked his footnotes. Most people don't do that. And I would find that he actually said the exact opposite in his text of what the source said.
Right.
And so that's one thing I learned early on. You can't – people say, oh, well, this is all sourced. I have foot – I mean, he starts citing study after study. But then I say, well, that study is wrong. That study you're misstating. That study you're just making stuff up. And I think that kind of put him on the defensive. But, hey, how'd you find out about the show? I always like to have new listeners.
I was on Radio Power.
Okay.
And as soon as Tom Hartman's over it.
Terrific.
Goes over to your show. And
well, I'm always glad to have new listeners. Let me ask you, since it is Election Tuesday, I assume you're a John Kerry supporter. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Who do you want to be his vice presidential choice? Have you thought about that yet?
My pick for VP is the same person who I originally supported for the Democratic nomination. Would be General Wesley Clark.
Okay. All right. I got one vote. Yeah, go ahead. I'm going to put down one vote for General Wesley Clark. Go ahead.
Okay. The reason why is, a lot of the things that John Kerry supports, wanting to help Social Security, help the elderly, prescription drugs, health care, and all that stuff, those things are great. Good job. But I think the biggest thing that we need right now in Washington is leadership.
Yep.
And I think that's the biggest detriment that we have right now and the biggest thing we need, and I think that's what Wes Clark would bring to the table.
He'd also bring to the table someone who understands today's military. I mean, John Kerry fought. He certainly understood more about the military than George Bush before
right.
Bush came to office. But Clark understands it as of today. He really – people forget what Clark did in Bosnia, in Kosovo. He genocide was going on. This isn't, Saddam Hussein being a danger 10 years ago. Occurring genocide was going on. General Clark actually saw it, wanted to do something about it. He was the supreme allied commander of NATO at the time, which meant that not only was he, in sense of power in the United States, but also in France and in Germany and England,
exactly.
Italy. They all had tremendous respect for what he did. And at the time, Bill Clinton, frankly, was not doing enough to stop what was going on in Kosovo, at least in my view. And Clark went, and he not only did the military terrific stuff, but he went and he lobbied. He knew how to do politics. He lobbied the president. He went with Madeleine Albright and very much persuaded Bill Clinton, even though some other generals were against it, to go in and do something. And people forget we didn't lose a single life. Not a single American life died in stopping that genocide, into making Kosovo a more peaceful place. It's not perfect, but compare that to a place like Iraq, and it's night and day.
Right.
And so I agree with you. I think General Clark would be a fine vice president. I think he'd be a fine president, and I'll give you a little secret. Although I'm certainly on board with John Kerry right now, I endorsed General Clark in his presidential campaign some months back. You can find that on my blog. So I totally understand where you're coming from, Grant.
I'm glad. I just would love to see the day. I mean, if I could, I'm really excited about the campaign coming up, and I'm doing my part. But I will tell you, if Wes Clark gets on that ticket, it's going to become a full time job.
Let me ask you, Grant. I mean, you're in Alabama. You're in one of the reddest states on the red and blue map of Bush and Gore in 2000. You're on one of the most conservative states in the United States.
Correct.
Although I understand you do actually have a Democratic governor and a Democratic legislature, I think. Isn't that right?
Actually, the governorship right now is Republican. However,
okay.
he supported a tax restructuring system
That's
that all
right.
the Republicans hated.
I remember that.
And it got defeated in referendum. Let's see. We had a Democratic governor that he replaced. We haven't had a two-term we haven't had a successful two-term governor since George Wallace.
Let me ask you this, most of my listeners aren't from deep red states, if you will, or like Alabama. What is it? Try to explain to those of us who live in Washington, D.C. or Massachusetts or California or New York, what is it that causes people in Alabama, most of them, obviously not yourself, to be so conservative? What is it that drives them to support people like George Bush?
Well, I think it's the George Bush's facade that I know he's all the way from Maine or New Hampshire, but he puts off this, well, I'm a good old boy, I drive a pickup truck, I listen to country music just like you.
So people think he's a southerner, is that what it is?
He puts off that facade like he's a good old boy.
Interesting.
And I think people eat it up, unfortunately, and they stop asking questions because they feel like they can trust him.
Yeah, and I guess they vote more for someone they feel like they could have a beer with than someone that is intelligent and follows policy, I guess.
Right. It's kind of sad. Also, to be the devil's advocate, I think that Democratic presidential candidates seem to just kind of give up on some of the southern states like Alabama, Mississippi,
particularly the Deep South.
They just kind of forget about us. I don't think it's enough electoral votes to really worry about. Although we do have 9, and now Mississippi has 8.
I think that's a lot. You know what I think it is? I think there's this. Your African American population heavily votes Democratic, but I wonder. And actually, I'm going to do a show later on, and I hope you'll call back during that show, Grant. We're going to do a show in the next coming days on the 50th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education. I really hope you'll call into that show. It strikes me that in the South, there's still, particularly the Deep South, there's still so much racial difference you've got huge black populations in Mississippi and Alabama, and they're voting almost unanimously for the Democrats. And then you have the whites that are voting pretty solidly, 60-40, maybe 70-30, for the Republicans. And it always struck me that there are a lot of poor people in the South, all across the country, but particularly in Mississippi and Alabama, a lot of poor white people. This is, I think, what Howard Dean was trying, and I think he failed when he talked about pickup trucks with Confederate flags. That wasn't quite the best way to put it, but there are a lot of poor white people in the South that I think if they look economically, purely at economics, they would understand, if they could be made to understand, that George Bush is not helping them.
Right, they're certainly not getting any richer.
Yeah, I mean, he's making it harder for poor and middle-class people to make a living. He's actually transferring the tax burden from the rich to their shoulders. And so if they would take away from racial politics and maybe some of this religious stuff or some of this anti-gay stuff and actually just focus on their economics, I think we could bring them back in droves to the Democratic Party. But my question for you, and you're down in Alabama, and also therefore you're my best expert I got right now, how do we get people, conservatives, poor whites particularly, or middle-class whites in the South, to focus on their economic interests and not on some of this religious or racial stuff?
Well, I think that's a very good question. Right now, and I'll answer that, there was a grassroots campaign that I was working with for the West Clark campaign, and we just came to the table. But when it all started, we said that the common scenario in Alabama is just simply if you keep putting in what you've always put in, you're always going to get out what you've always gotten out. And essentially that's what's happened here in Alabama. The Democratic or more liberal candidate will focus on raising money and contacting, big wigs in the state and things of that nature, and that's great. But focus nothing on grassroots. There's been one exception. We had our last Democratic governor, the guy that this governor replaced, Don Siegelman.
Yep.
He had one of the best grassroots campaigns ever and won by the largest margin in state history, even better than George Wallace had ever won. So I know it can work, and John Kerry has picked up our team to work for him.
The Siegelman team, he's picked it up.
He's picked up the same team that we were working under West
Clark. Oh, I see.
And a lot of the I'm sure a lot of the team under Siegelman will follow as well. I'm sure they're not going to support Bush. But the structure right now is looking pretty good. It's definitely not as good as it was under the Siegelman camp, I'll be honest with you. That was a dream team.
Well, maybe the Siegelman camp will come and really help. I'll tell you, I happen to live in Virginia, and which is actually a bit closer in presidential politics, though still a Republican state. And I do hope very much John Kerry doesn't give up on the South. And I agree with you that General Wesley Clark from Arkansas could bring in a lot of Southerners, and a double military ticket, I think, would be a dream team. Hey, thanks very much for your call, Grant. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
We're going to go to commercial break, but if you want to call in and give me your pick for vice presidential nominee under John Kerry, I encourage you to do so. The numbers are 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, which is 877-577-2667, or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. And I know many of you didn't get a chance to comment on yesterday's really raucous debate between myself and Glenn Stanton, the director of marriage and sexuality studies at Focus on the Family, really a prime anti-gay marriage opponent. And if you want to comment on that, that's welcome, too. Again, the numbers are 877-57-SCOOP or comment@radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop, working to kick out the Republicans right after this break.
We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
The powers that be, both political and corporate, are expert at fooling themselves while mistakenly thinking that they're also fooling us. The latest culprits in this fool's game are the barons of cable television. Lobbyists for such outfits as Time Warner, Cablevision, and Cox rammed a deregulation law through Congress in 1997 that allows them to set their own rates. Trust us, they said at the time, promising that the elixir of unregulated competition would magically cause our monthly cable charges to fall. Like rubes at their first medicine show, Congress swallowed this tonic of lies, and now you and I are stuck with an unregulated cable TV monopoly in each of our towns that, far from lowering our rates, has jacked up our monthly bills by 40% in just 6 years. Well, yes, say the cable giants, but we now give you more channels than before. Who do they think they're fooling? Yes, we get more channels, but they show the same old junk, including repeats of repeats and dozens of channels we never requested and never watch. Indeed, we pay for about 63 channels, but mostly watch about 8. Well, yes, say the giants again, still believing they're fooling us, but the fees we pay for programming are up too, so we're being forced to raise our rates. Hey, Flim Flam Man, in many cases, you are the programmer. For example, Time Warner owns CNN, TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network, and many others, so it's paying itself for the higher program costs. Besides, the cost of all the programs you get on cable is only about $7 of your monthly cable bill, which now averages nearly $37. Well, yes, say the giants, trying one more trick on us, but we need higher rates to survive. Survive? Your profit margins are running above 30%, about 3 times the average of other industries. This is Jim Hightower saying, to fight this tomfoolery, call Consumers Union, 202-462-6262.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our May tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at toyota.com/owners.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine, your host on this Election Tuesday, when we talk about all that's going to go on in the election from now till Well, that most important Tuesday in November when we kick out the Republicans, as the song says, by Donny Daly. And I'm taking your VP choices now. Who do you think that John Kerry should have as vice presidential nominee? We got one vote for Wes Clark. I got another vote here by email from J.D. J.D. writes, whatever happened to former Senate leader George Mitchell? He would be my choice. I always thought that he's one of the most honorable men to serve in Congress. Could this perhaps be why he's no longer actively or publicly involved? Hey, that's an interesting choice. It's not one that I have on my list. I'll read out my list so far. Possible choices, we'll go through them. Just real quick, Governor Richardson of New Mexico, Rendell of Pennsylvania, Napolitano of Arizona, McCain of Arizona, Bill and Hillary Clinton, Tom Vilsack, Evan Bayh, John Breaux, and of course the candidates that he beat, Howard Dean, Dick Gephardt, John Edwards, Wesley Clark, and Senator Graham of Florida. That's my list. Who do you want on this election Tuesday? We got a vote for Wesley Clark and a vote for George Mitchell. I got to tell you, George Mitchell, I think he is an honorable man. I think he's a good man. I think he means well. I think he'd be a fine president. I don't think he has a snowball's chance in hell of getting to be John Kerry's vice presidential nominee, simply because he's from Maine. And if John Kerry doesn't do a clean sweep of the Northeast, then really he has no chance at all. What's interesting about that is that it's looking like New Hampshire, the only state in New England to go for George Bush, seems to be solidly in John Kerry's camp now. I don't think he'll choose George Mitchell of Maine. He's a fellow senator. I don't think he adds much to the ticket in terms of geographic diversity. I do agree with you that George Mitchell is a good man and would be a fine choice. I just don't really think there's a chance. Again, who do you think should be picked? 877-57-SCOOP is the toll-free number. 877-577-2667. Or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. And I know some of you still want to talk about yesterday's pretty raucous debate I had on gay marriage with Glenn Stanton, a Focus on the Family. If you want to comment on that, that's fine too. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
This is Gordon from Michigan.
Hey, Gordon from Michigan. What do you want to talk about?
What's that?
What do you want to talk about? Vice presidential choices, gay marriage, Bush is falling in the polls?
Well, let me try to stay away from gay marriage. I'd like to make a vote for the impossible connection between McCain and Kerry.
Well, that's a very interesting thing. That's I think, the press's favorite, and I think many Americans' favorite. In times of crisis, there's only been one example that I can think of in American history where presidents of, and vice presidents of different parties ran together. In fact, just historically, you may know that at the very beginning of the Constitution, the vice president was the second greatest choice of the American people. So George Washington was the first choice, John Adams was the second choice. John Adams was the first choice, Thomas Jefferson was the second choice. If that were the rule today, of course, Gore would be president and Bush would be vice president. But that law changed in 1804, and since that time, we've only had candidates of the same party, with one exception. In 1864, Abraham Lincoln chose Andrew Johnson as part of the National Unity Party. Lincoln was a Republican, Johnson was a Democrat, and he brought someone from the other party really to unify the country. It's very interesting, the talk about John McCain. Tell me why you would like John McCain as vice president.
Well, McCain fancies himself a follower of Teddy Roosevelt.
Right.
Who, if you remember, was a Republican, but also became the leader of the Bull Moose Party.
Right, and the progressive movement.
Because he became disenchanted with what was going on with the Republicans.
Right.
So I'm thinking McCain is maverick enough to be able to pull off this trans-partisan type ticket.
I'll tell you this. I do think a Kerry McCain ticket would be the strongest. There's no question in my mind that I think it would sweep the country.
I think it would be a blowaway.
On the other hand, I can see how many Democrats would not want McCain on the ticket. Look, McCain is leagues better than Bush. He's one of my favorite Republicans. He is still a Republican. He's against abortion in practically any case. He is not particularly good on a lot of civil rights issues. He's a good man, don't get me wrong, and he's far better than any other Republican I know of in the Senate, certainly. Well, almost the best, let's say. There's Chafee of Rhode Island is actually a pretty liberal Republican. But he's a good man. But, you know, if Kerry were to die in office, how would you feel as a I assume you're a Democrat, right? Maybe I shouldn't assume that.
Well,
are you an independent?
I don't think McCain is going to cut his throat politically, and I think that's what his problem is right now.
Well, that's the other issue, is that McCain, I don't think, would accept such a thing. Because McCain plans to run for president, no question about it. If Kerry wins in 2004, McCain will be his opponent in 2008, and he'll be a very difficult opponent because he's a moderate Republican. There are not many of those left, but he's definitely one of them. So I think you're right. I think McCain... You know, the worst thing
but
in the world...
I also recognize the impossibility of the situation because McCain has denied it, and I think he's basically a man of his word, and he's not going to do it. So that's why I'm going to go for Wes Clark. I think he's
okay.
A man of stability and stature and could carry the act off well.
All right, I'll give you one vote for each. You know, I think the worst thing in the world would be for John Kerry to ask John McCain and to get a no. To get a no. I mean, that would really hurt John Kerry. I think if they're going to reach out to McCain, I hope they're doing it very quietly, very secretly, and get an absolute yes before they take him on. I do think McCain's a fine man. I think he'd be a fine president. I do wish we could push him on some of the issues to be more of a Democrat. But he's certainly a fine man, and I think he would definitely, that ticket would win a landslide.
I think he still would want to position himself as being a Republican candidate for president.
I think he does, and I think he sees he can get the top position, and it's unlikely that, you know, if Kerry wins, he'll die in office, and I think McCain actually is going for number one, not number two. But it's an interesting choice, and I think one of the reasons the press loves the idea so much is because it's so rare to have candidates from different parties actually run together. And it's an interesting idea, and I can tell you this: I think it would be a landslide. That's for sure. And if your only goal is to get Kerry elected, McCain may well be the best choice.
Well, they might not have to deal with McCain because as Bush is going, he might be going into the election with below a 40% approval rating.
Yeah.
So in that case, I would say just go with Wesley Clark.
Well, he's down to 42, which is definitely his lowest.
Wait till June. Wait till the turnover of power in Iraq happens, and we'll see what happens because...
Turnover or lack thereof. I mean, we don't even know who we're turning it over to. The guy we want to turn it over to...
Well, the guy just got...
just going to say that. He was just killed... You know,
Who wants to be the next one, right?
You know, it's such a mess there. It's such a mess, and it's so hard to claim. You know, first, of course, there are weapons of mass destruction. All right, haven't found those. You know, then of course it's we have to free Iraq. We have to make it free and democratic. But Bush doesn't want to be free and democratic because then they can vote us out. And that's why we keep installing leaders that keep getting killed. It's a very ugly mess.
Well, like Joe Biden just said, it's time for Bush to show some leadership and being able to get some kind of international support. Now is the time to do it, not 90 days from now.
Yeah, and actually that's, again, where someone like Wes Clark would be perfect. I can't think of a more international leader among all the people I mentioned. And then General Wesley Clark, again, the former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, if there's anyone who can get our allies to rejoin us to help America again, it's Wes Clark.
Oh, yeah, he's got international integrity.
Exactly, and that's hard to find these days. Hey, Gordon, thanks very much for your call.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. Who should be the VEEP choice? I gave him two votes since he gave sort of both for McCain and Clark. That leaves two votes for Clark, one for Mitchell, one for McCain. I want to talk about some of the other choices, though. One of the choices that's most been talked about, and if I had to vote, I think is the most likely candidate, is probably Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico. He is a guy that has he's got experience as a governor, of course. He worked in the Clinton administration. And he's really – it's hard to know any negatives. He's half Latino. He could really get the Latino vote. The Southwest is really prime territory. Remember, New Mexico went for Gore by like less than 500 votes. It was very close. Arizona has voted for Clinton in the past and might well go again. Colorado is not out of the question. And, I mean, he's done everything. Bill Richardson was not only Secretary of Energy. He was ambassador to the United Nations, so he's got that international experience. I think he'd be a fine choice. There's also Governor Rendell, just to go through the governor's list of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is a very important state. If we don't win Pennsylvania, we're not going to win anything at all. And he's someone, I think, who definitely would have a lot of support from labor and others. And the choice, of course, that most people are talking about is neither of them. The choice that most people talk about is John Edwards. I don't know what you think about him. But John Edwards, of course, ran against Senator Kerry in the campaign, got second place. He's from the South. He's young. He's telegenic. He speaks a good speech about two Americas, one rich and one poor. And a lot of people, in fact, they did a CNN poll, one of those where you call in. They had sort of a brackets, tournaments. John Edwards won. He was considered the best candidate. Interestingly, Wesley Clark was second, which would have surprised me. You don't hear much about Wes Clark these days. The press doesn't talk about him much. But certainly my listeners have. What do you think about John Edwards? Is he the guy? What about Hillary Clinton? You know, if you look at the Democrat most admired by Democrats, it's usually none of these people. It's not Kerry. It's usually Hillary Clinton. But she said she served out her term, and no one seems to think that she's got a chance. Or another woman that they are often talking about, another governor, is Janet Napolitano of Arizona. Governor of Arizona, you may not have heard about her, but again, it's in the Southwest. And she is a governor, certainly a respectable candidate, and another respectable female candidate. One thing I heard on Crossfire about a month ago about vice presidential choices, though, was dead wrong. I actually heard Tucker Carlson and Paul Begala argue over whether Bill Clinton would be a good vice presidential nominee. And I'm a big fan of Bill Clinton. I think he had a lot of mistakes, but he was clearly the best president in my lifetime. And he might be an interesting president again, but it's just not possible, folks. And it struck me that the people at Crossfire should have known that. They should have done their basic review. They should have had a constitutional lawyer look at the Constitution. But if anyone tells you Bill Clinton would be a good choice, just let them know it's not possible. The 22nd Amendment to the United States Constitution says a president cannot hold more than two terms of office. But the same is true for vice president. The 12th Amendment to the Constitution, the same amendment that says that you run for vice president rather than the second choice that I talked about earlier in the program, used to be that you get second choice for president, they become vice president. Now, vice president runs with the president. The 12th Amendment says at the very end, no person constitutionally ineligible to the office of president should be eligible to that of vice president of the United States. So, Crossfire notwithstanding, some of the pundits notwithstanding, the Constitution prohibits Bill Clinton from running again. That's not possible. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls. The number's 877-57-SCOOP. You can also send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Before we go to break, though, I want to read an email from Diana in Florida, who responded to my talking with Grant earlier from Alabama about poor whites in the South. Diana in Florida writes, I'm a liberal. She writes, Mark, I'm a liberal living in the South. You and I know that if poor whites could be convinced to vote their own economic welfare, they would vote Democratic. But the overriding issues with them are race and religion. They don't vote based on reason or logic. They vote their emotions and prejudices. There is nothing Bush could do to lose them, short of being caught in bed with a live boy or a dead woman, and nothing the Democrats can do to win them. Kerry is making me furious because he's obviously courting the swing Republicans and taking Democrats for granted. Someone needs to remind him he needs to inspire the Democrats to come to the polls in November, otherwise he'll lose by default. And if he takes McCain or Lieberman as a running mate, I will vote green. Taking a Republican running mate is a slap in the face to liberals I will not forgive, ever. Okay, well, that's Diane in Florida making a very strong point, somewhat counteracting Gordon in Michigan, saying, you know what? If Kerry chooses McCain, he'll gain the middle, but he might lose the liberals. Strong point. Hey, let me know what you think. 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back right after this.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
First, it was overtime pay. Now the U.S. Department of Labor is making cuts to the safety net for the nation's shrinking manufacturing workforce. A change in the rules governing the provision of emergency funds to help retrain those laid off will now only give money to layoffs that affect 50 people or more. Small companies in rural states where little layoffs have big impacts are apparently out of luck.
Houston City employees face an uncertain retirement after Houston voters approved a new proposition in a special election last weekend. The measure allows the city to opt out of a constitutional amendment designed to protect municipal employees' pensions. Only 8.5% of registered voters went to the polls, but of those, 73% voted to exempt the city. The measure passed largely due to city officials' claims that the pension fund was in debt and unsustainable. Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas worked unsuccessfully to stop the pension measure from passing.
If this happens in Houston, then other municipalities and states may get an idea, oh, here's how to eliminate workers' rights. We'll just go straight to the public. We'll tell them about increased taxes. We'll tell them about decreased services, and we'll have the kind of vote that we would need. This is a red flag that should go up around the nation.
Mayor Bill White's Political Action Committee outspent union efforts to stop the measure by more than $500,000.
Looking at discrimination in the workplace, the FBI is examining evidence collected by a county sheriff in Tennessee as part of an investigation into racism at a Goodyear tire plant. Last month, an African-American machinist found a hangman's noose in his work area, accompanied by a letter filled with slurs. A janitor has also complained about someone intentionally clogging up factory toilets and leaving racist messages at the scene. In Seattle, the Boeing Corporation has agreed to discuss a settlement to the largest class action gender discrimination lawsuit in U.S. history, which was scheduled to go to trial yesterday. The company and attorneys for 28,000 women have 45 days to find common ground. Boeing still found itself in the Seattle courtroom Monday, though, as opening arguments were heard in another discrimination claim involving more than 1,800 Asian and Middle Eastern engineers.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Good news for corporate executives. According to a new study by Booz Allen Hamilton Consulting Firm, chief executive firings are at their lowest rate in 5 years. The study looked at 2,500 large corporations and found that in 2003, fewer than 10% replaced their CEOs. Annual turnover rates in the U.S. vary from 300% in the fast food industry to 9% for airline employees.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
About the middle class, but the giant corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop. This is Tuesday, and every Tuesday from now till November 2nd, we go over the election. We talk about election choices, polls, what's going on. And today we're talking about vice presidential choices. Who would you pick for John Kerry to pick as vice president? We've gone over a few of them. One of the most interesting choices is Dick Gephardt of Missouri. Of course, he is the former leader of the Democrats in the House. He's got great ties with labor, and he may be someone to pull over the Midwest. Maybe he can pull over his own state, Missouri, and maybe the very important state of Ohio. That really, I think, if we can win Ohio or Missouri, we've got this election. We can kick out the Republicans. And yet others say that Gephardt, he's been around a little too often. He's run for president a little too much. His time is gone. The numbers are 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free 877-577-2667. Lines are wide open, so you can definitely get in and get your choice registered. You know, it's an interesting time. We've got Michael Moore in Cannes, France, right, in Cannes, bad French. Michael Moore in Cannes got a 20-minute standing ovation for his movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, that talks about all the mistakes of the Bush administration, talks about the ties between the Bush administration and Saudi Arabia, some of the ties we've discussed here on the Inside Scoop. He's getting a 20-minute standing ovation but he can't get his movie produced in the United States because conservatives have locked up the distribution centers. We're living in a time where Europeans and people abroad are all getting it. They all hate our president with a fervor that I've never seen. Now, I don't think there's any American president that has incurred the hatred, I mean, sheer dislike of foreigners that Bush has had. I mean, he really has taken our standing and dumped it in the toilet. And yet here in America, it's still neck and neck. But he is falling down on the job. And like I said, I guess that's the silver lining to all that we've seen. What's interesting also is that this is a president that never admits mistakes, right? He can't even think of a mistake when asked. He doesn't know he's made any mistakes. And I think Americans are learning that they may have valued sort of what seems like strength and decision-making, a president that doesn't change his mind. But when he doesn't change his mind, he's heading off a cliff. Americans are now starting to say, hey, whoa, well, what is it about this? Why are you heading off a cliff? You know, he won't fire anybody. George Bush, he won't fire George Tenet, CIA director. He won't fire Don Rumsfeld. Nobody makes mistakes in the Bush administration, and I think Americans are starting to learn, well, maybe the Bush administration is a mistake. But back to the VP choices. Who would you pick? We've mentioned Governor Richardson, Rendell, Napolitano, McCain, the two Clintons. How about Howard Dean? Now, Howard Dean, he definitely energized the Democratic Party, no question about it. He made it good to be a Democrat again. He said he's from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. What about Howard Dean? I mean, he's a lot of people think he would really harm the ticket. He's from Vermont. He's New England. He's definitely seen as a liberal. I don't think Dean has much choice, but I had to throw his name in. What about Senator Graham of Florida? I mean, a person who wins that crucial state could be the difference. Who's your pick? We've got two votes for General Clark, one for George Mitchell, one for John McCain. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. Who do you pick for vice president?
I pick the senator from North Carolina, John Edwards.
Okay, tell me why.
I think that the Republicans, which put Bush and Cheney, have gone ahead and made this campaign very nasty. With John Edwards, you've had a person who wouldn't talk nasty about anybody else, and I think that would come across to a whole group of voters who feel comfortable with people who act nicely.
Okay, but what about the problem with you know, if the other campaign is throwing all this negative stuff at you and you're too nice, that sometimes the negative stuff sticks. I mean, I don't remember Dukakis going negative against Bush, but Bush went so negative against Dukakis back in 1988 that Dukakis lost in a landslide.
Yeah, but I think Edwards is capable, A, of fighting back, but he can fight back with a nice face, okay. Whereas if if you just and certainly John Kerry isn't holding back. He's not playing Patsy of the Month by any standards. But if you had John Edwards out there, you would show that there is a balance to the ticket. And although John Edwards is young, he is photogenic, and people seem to like him. And he was obviously the second best in the primaries. And I think you'd help unite a greater portion of people who are sort of on the fence, and that's the group that you need to attract, is the people on the fence.
Well, as I mentioned in the CNN poll, which is a non-scientific poll, John Edwards won as the most likely nominee, as the one that people most want to see as vice presidential choice. But what Kerry insiders are saying is, we're not sure this guy can win his own state, and if he can't win North Carolina, where will John Edwards help?
Well, here's the thing. I think you know, first, I don't know whether he'll win North Carolina or not, because I'm not from North Carolina. But what I can tell you is he's the type of candidate who can add votes across the board in many different states.
Because of his optimistic disposition?
Yeah, that's it. You've got it exactly right. And, you know, there in the last election, there were so many close states that if you just got a few more votes in a bunch of those close states, that would be enough to make the difference.
Well, let me play devil's advocate with you. You know, one of the complaints about Bush and Cheney, of course, is they're multimillionaires. They're in bed with corporations. Senator Kerry obviously is a very wealthy man. John Edwards is a wealthy trial lawyer, and a lot of people don't like trial lawyers. Will that harm him?
Well, yeah, but there's the problem with that is John Edwards, Senator Edwards is a self-made man.
That's true.
He grew up
poor.
On the wrong side of the track.
That's true.
And he barely got himself to college. And we Americans, we admire people who go ahead and make something of themselves. And that's exactly what he did.
That's true. He always talks about his father was a mill worker, and he's the son of a mill worker. And that's a good point. He's definitely a self-made man, unlike Bush and Cheney, born into money, or even Kerry, who married money. John Edwards is someone who made it on his own. Hey, thanks very much for your call. I appreciate that. If you want to call in, get one last vote, it's 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. So far, General Wesley Clark is ahead. He's got two votes. John Edwards won. George Mitchell won. John McCain won. Who do you think should be the vice presidential nominee? Again, no one has voted for the person who I think is still the most likely one, and that's Governor Richardson of New Mexico, because he is half Latino, because he's been a governor of a state that is a swing state, no question about it, and is a region that is a swing region, and because he's got executive experience. I mean, this is a guy who was Secretary of Energy under Clinton. He was also United Nations representative. What do you think? Is Bill Richardson the guy? Why? Why or why not? I did want to, and I did promise this at the beginning, so as we're moving to a close, I want to go over just a few of the legal issues that I didn't get to cover yesterday on gay marriage, because I think it's important that people understand them. One of the questions that I've been getting in emails back and forth is the question of the legality of out-of-state marriages. People have been asking me, as a constitutional lawyer, Mark, that this is from Bob in Arlington, says, Mark, as a constitutional lawyer, can you explain to me what happens if an out-of-state couple goes to Massachusetts and gets married there, a gay couple? And I think that's a great question, and I want to answer it. The short answer is it's unclear, but that's an unfair answer, right? The answer is this. The states can recognize whatever they want. Okay, Massachusetts can recognize out-of-state couples. Indeed, most states don't care, don't notice. That's why you get a quickie divorce in Nevada. You just go down there, you get a divorce, and you're fine. Or you get married, as Britney Spears found. She can get married one drunken evening at 3 in the morning, and it's pretty easy. Most states don't look, don't notice. There is a 1913 law in Massachusetts that served to protect the racists who opposed interracial marriages. See, back in 1913, many states, the majority of states, in fact, were against interracial marriages, banned interracial marriages, not just in the South, but in states like California as well. Of course, 1913 was a long time ago. And back then, even Massachusetts, although they allowed interracial marriages, they were afraid that people would complain, as they are with gay marriages now, that they were opening up the wedge to allow all of America to have interracial marriages, and as horrible as that would be. So Massachusetts said, well, okay, we won't recognize states that people from states that want to get married in Massachusetts where the law is against it in their home state. And that law really hasn't been used much since 1913, but Republican Governor Romney of Massachusetts is dusting off the old law. He's defending, a law that the Klan, I'm sure, is a big fan of, and trying to use it to say that out-of-state couples who try to get married in Massachusetts, their marriages won't be legal. But town clerks are fighting back. Massachusetts, of course, has a proud history of liberal tradition, and town clerks are saying, we're not going to check. We're not going to check where people are from. And even the Attorney General of New York, Elliot Spitzer, has said that even though gay marriages are not yet legal in New York, they will be legal if New Yorkers go to Massachusetts. Now, the governor of New York has said the opposite. The answer is, at the end of the day, it's going to be up to the courts to decide. And I think that as time goes on, more and more of these marriages will be accepted, and it's really just a matter of time. I should also mention the Constitution. There's a clause called the Full Faith and Credit Clause. That clause in the Constitution says that states have to recognize other states' judicial acts. In other words, some would say that marriage, being a judicial act, is something that has to be recognized by another state. Some would say no, it doesn't, if it violates public policy. This is going to be a battle that's fought state by state until, really, I think it'll be across the nation. And I got to say, I support that. As much as I support gay marriages, I think that it is a new concept to many people, and it will work better if it starts out in Massachusetts and then goes to another state and then to another state. You got to remember, in the Civil Rights era, we didn't end Jim Crow laws. We didn't end segregation all in one fell swoop. Brown versus Board of Education didn't come out of nowhere. Thurgood Marshall worked very hard in case after case to slowly break down the barriers of segregation. 1948, in fact, is when California first had a case that stopped the ban on interracial marriages, and it wasn't until 1967 that the Supreme Court followed suit. So state by state, I say, let people decide. I think that's a good thing. I think that's how we get change in America. And I would just note that the Republicans who support a constitutional amendment to overturn states' rights really aren't following states' rights very well, are they? They claim to support states' rights, but you and I know they really don't. Hey, this is Mark Levine. We've had a great show today, this Election Tuesday. Tune in tomorrow for another edition of the Inside Scoop. 3 Eastern, 2 Central, 1 Mountain, noon Pacific. This is Mark Levine signing off.
$500 billion deficit. It's time to make